recorder is on.
Thank you. Let's take roll. Commissioner Smith, let's start with you.
Jeremy Smith.
Fourth ward.
Thank you.
Jimmy Hill.
Susie Earp.
Dee Truax Godinez.
Sandra Owen Olivas.
Nicholas Rocco Cataldo. Commissioner, fifth ward.
Fifth ward. Are there any public comments for items not on the agenda?
No.
No? Okay. Let's go to item number 5. Let's review the minutes of our last meeting on October 12th.
It's only half a year old.
Any corrections?
I saw none.
Can I have a motion?
I move that we accept the minutes as stated.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. Let's vote on it.
Aye.
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 All righty. Nobody's opposed. I don't think anybody can remember back that far.
I'm sure it's too far.
Okay. So let's start with our first item of old business, the plaques. This issue has been forever since I've been on this commission. So what I was hoping for, since we've had plenty of time to look at other ones and do all that, I would like to see this on the council agenda for approval for the plaque that we already do have. Is there any conversation?
Let's just do it.
Is it time to let's just do it?
Well, we've talked about it for a long time. You're right. We've gone over prices and what it's going to look like, and I think it's time to put it.
And, I mean, it's not that I won't accept their input. I mean, we're still flexible as far as if they, you know, completely don't want to see that design or whatever. I'm okay with that, but I think we just need to get this going with something.
If I may, Chair.
Yes, sir.
The council, and we can make extra copies of this, but the council actually did approve an item back in March, actually almost 2 years ago now.
Oh, gosh.
March 17th of 2014. And I don't know, I believe several of you were on the Park Force, were commissioners at that time? Or
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we already did this? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, the council did approve plaques, but they were voluntary.
Right.
Correct.
So what the action that the council took was, and I'll just read this section here that Lisa was able to find. This was prior to my time here. But Section 1 of Resolution 2014-56 says, again, Section 1, the mayor and common council hereby authorize the use of the city seal on plaques installed on properties to recognize that said properties are part of the city's Mills Act program. Mm-hmm. So what they didn't do was pre-approve a design, mm-hmm. Because in order to use the city seal, you have to have council approval.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So if the commission wanted to standardize a suggested design, mm-hmm. That might be a way to go. I know there's been some discussion ongoing since I've been here about, are they wood plaques, are they granite plaques, are they metal plaques?
Poorly used to carry these around. Listener. And so the plaque...
Lisa has saved me so many times. I will just say that as an aside.
I know. Well, she saved all of us. Does it not have the city seal on it?
It does.
Okay. So
they approved this using a seal, but they haven't approved the plaque.
I don't think they need to approve because it's voluntary. I would suggest that the commission could come up with a suggested design. Because the only thing the council has to approve is use of the city seal.
Okay, so we could just, we could go before them and say, this is our design, how do you, they could say yay or nay.
And a copy, or a, like a photocopy of that plaque was also sent along with this reso so that they could have an idea of how it would look.
So they've seen it already?
Yes.
I mean, the council's seen a lot of stuff in the last 2 years, so what they need to know or call is,
So what do we need to do that we haven't done already, or do it again?
I guess it would be just confirm that those are one of the, you know, the design that you would like to go with. And we would then, I guess what we could do is send out a letter to all of the properties that are under contract and say that the owners, you know, I guess we, the commission, can we say, maybe this would be the action that the commission would encourage property owners that are on the Mills Act to post a plaque.
Just made something mandatory, but we're encouraging.
Right.
And the cost is blank.
One's lighter than the other one,
Correct.
Right. And that we could get that letter set up for the chair will leave us to sign. And, you know, you could come in if that's the motion that the commission ultimately takes.
So are we going to say they have a choice between the heavier one and the lighter one? Or are we just going to say lighter one?
No, let's just go with one.
Let's just go with one.
Well, there's three different costs. And, you know, what we would do is, you know, we would try to work with a printer. But, I mean, these things could cost, you know, $300 to $500.
Right.
For a property.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
But
for
the thinner one would be a lot less. This would be this would be a lot less than this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think the material cost is probably not,
the material cost is minimal.
The material cost is the setup cost.
Okay,
it's the embossing. So whether it's an eighth of an inch plaque or a 5/8 of an inch plaque, I don't think that's, and it's probably $20 or $30 difference.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it's still going to cost people plus or minus $500.
We're just giving them option to do this or not. They don't have to do it.
Right.
And if they have the option, do they have option of where it goes on their dwelling?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I would think so.
What has the opposition been in the past where it's taken so long for it to...
Oh, okay.
Materials. So, I mean, as you know, a lot of brass things have been stolen around town.
Mm-hmm.
So the fear was that these plaques would... you know, be put up on people's houses and somebody come along and scrape them off. So then, you know, we've done everything from wood to marble to stone to concrete to... And we got really close to going with something else. I want to say marble plaque. And then one of the commissioners had a big fit.
Well, I would imagine that's pretty expensive.
That it wasn't... It wasn't classy enough to put on a house, and that she would, you know, so she sort of bombed that whole thing. So, basically, that's been the fight for years.
Okay, well, let's just get it taped.
Oh, I'm going to say one more quick thing. As far as whoever posts the plaque, are we going to have a standard as far as where they're going to put their plaque at?
Well, that was the question that Commissioner Hill asked. That's up to you all.
I think we could, again, say in the letter, we would strongly encourage you to put it in the front of your house where people could see it.
Yeah,
but, I mean, I don't know if this is something we want to regulate. Do we?
No.
I don't.
No. No, okay, I would say we could regulate it if we were paying for them. We're not paying for them.
Right.
So we're like, okay, if you want to put it in your front room, under glass, I don't. As long as it's somewhere.
Right.
You know?
Well, it doesn't have to be somewhere. I mean, they can do it. I mean, they can use it as
actually,
a
rope stop.
Paperweight.
Yeah. So, okay. So your recommendation is what?
Well, if you want to, the council has taken the action that they need to take, which is allowing property owners to use the city seal.
Okay.
So I would think that it's now up to the commission to decide, do you direct the chair to send out a letter encouraging people to install these signs at their cost in a location that they deem appropriate.
This is just appropriate. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we could craft a letter for the chair to sign.
Yeah, this is just an opportunity to recognize
and
the historic
we,
value
we'll
of
We'll try
the
to work with a sign company that could actually manufacture them.
Do we know who made these ones?
Yes. Back in 2012, this commission took action to have Monumental Bronze and Granite be the sole supplier of these plaques. Mm.
No, they're out of business.
Oh, great.
That's what happened at that time.
Okay, so we need to find somebody else.
We have 40 years.
Yeah. Okay, we approve the plaques and all the pages out of business. That's not a good thing.
I guess the time frame has to be some 4 years.
I don't know who does these types of signs.
Well, I do know that, I don't know what the name of the company is, but it's up on...
Does Quill do that?
No.
There's a place... This is pretty small for Quill, I would think.
Timeless. And All-Star Engraving and Monumental Bronze were the three companies this commission authorized me to get quotes from. And then you voted on Monumental Bronze and Granite, which was the most expensive one out of the three.
Okay, well, let's go back to Timeless.
Least expensive? At the time.
Timeless.
Let's go back to Timeless.
Yeah, Timeless and All-Star were pretty close. Timeless was a couple of dollars less.
Okay.
Are they both in business?
I think Timeless is.
I think
Timeless survives because it's by the university and they get a lot of plaques made.
Okay. So, 40th Street. I've never seen a sign recently.
So, how do we check on it?
40th Street.
Okay.
Lisa!
Yeah. And then, I would say that the commission, somebody should craft a motion to allow the chair to sign a letter. We will work with the vendor, and then again, we would just encourage them to use that vendor, and we could send them a copy of that plaque design.
I like that motion.
Yes.
Okay, I second.
Now, under discussion, I just wanted to, the Native Sons are pretty much in the business of making plaques. That's basically what we do. In fact, we're actually presenting a plaque to 7 schools in the next 2.5 months in San Bernardino, working through the school district. But all the plaques that we make right now, and I'm just in discussion, because again, I think Nick and Susie and I, or I guess maybe the others here, were on the commission when we went through all this process. But the only reason I mentioned that is that the only plaques we make right now are made of granite. Okay, I'm not recommending that but I think that might be, if there's some concern of the homeowner that they have a bronze plaque or made out of this, if they're concerned about someone stealing it or something, then if we could give them an option of maybe having it made in granite. Now, granite plaques are about half the cost, of these plaques, so... That might be something that we might want to just call
granite
to them since it's voluntary. Granite is cheaper.
You know what I think would be really cool? Going back to, I know this is back to design thing. But personally, it would be really cool if you just had the shape of the arrowhead, and that would be the plaque. And, well, I mean, with the words, but not this square part. Just the arrowhead, and that's what you have fixed onto your house.
Oh, not the whole square.
Not the square, just the arrowhead. I think that would be cool.
Okay, so now we've got granite, and
now
that's just the shape again.
Well, if they make just the shape of the arrowhead, mm-hmm. would that be more expensive or it's more intricate?
No, granite plaques. You know, the cost of a bronze plaque, and this is much larger than this, understand, is like $1,300. Mm-hmm. A granite plaque is about $700. So I think if cost was a concern, then I think it would be appropriate to give them an option of maybe having it in granite rather than...
as far as mounting, is that something that...
It's their decision. It's not our cost, so...
Yes, Lisa.
Chair, the material that you voted on at the time was zinc, not bronze.
Right, it's yeah, that's the slight one.
Bronze is what people steal.
Yeah, that's
and, but this looks like bronze is the problem. And if the homeowner has this on their house, it looks like something to steal. And we did go around and around about this. And I...
I mean,
personally, I think it would be awesome to have a granite arrowhead on my house.
I think people are still apt to take it if they think it's bronze.
Okay, so we're back to granite and just an arrowhead. Is that...
With the words on it, and the seal and all that stuff. Yeah. Just the intro.
Okay.
Well, I think... I'm not an attorney, and I don't play that on TV.
Okay.
But it may be a conflict for if your organization is the only source and you're a commissioner.
Oh, I'm not saying use his source.
Okay.
I'm not saying.
Not at all.
Because Native Sons has to say this plaque has been erected by the Native Sons. So we're not using the Native Sons.
Yeah, if you
stuff.
Want to recuse me, that's fine. I don't have a problem.
But you're not against suggestions.
I'm just trying to be helpful.
So I don't. We could try to find, does anybody know a vendor or two?
Again, I think Timeless will.
Would you do granite as well?
Okay, I think we need to back up a second. All right. We've changed the material. We've changed the design. And I really think there needs to be a motion made that by somebody on this commission that everybody's in agreement of this, that we change it to granite and the design to that before we have anybody looking for anything else. Because if it's not the will of this commission, then it's a waste of time. Okay? So I need a motion, please.
So the motion is, to make sure that the motion is going to be for a granite, an arrowhead-shaped marker
with
a granite.
Okay. With the same writing.
That's what we...
Is that your motion?
Okay.
Lisa's dying to say something.
Okay. May I suggest that perhaps the motion be to look into the cost of various materials based on this new design instead of setting a motion as a certain material because that may prove to be too expensive.
You're right about that.
Okay. Although Jim mentioned it.
So maybe your motion should be to continue it to our next meeting until we find those prices. Would you be open to that?
Or continue to the next meeting with pricing.
Okay.
Yeah, and then they'll be reporting back on the pricing of these materials and the design.
And then we can also come back with a draft of the letter for the
Right. And that'll be next month.
Yeah, we've already approved the letter.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, really, the material could be stone or wood, as far as I'm.
Everybody's just kind of wanting to get away from the bronze look. Is that what I'm
think it's a bronze steel. I mean,
yeah, okay.
We've had so many sites.
What about like a lucite? The only problem with the lucite thing is it's so modern looking on an old building. It's
good
kind
point.
Of a disconnect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good point.
Okay.
Also, before we go, is there any way to also add to that to where we could maybe have names of people that might do the mounting, because I would think that could be a factor of people doing it or not doing it.
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. Vendors for the installation.
Is this what Commissioner Bone was working on?
Well, he's absent.
Okay.
Oh,
I think he was talking about the historic.
He was talking about looking at other designs and stuff.
No, I don't think he meant these, though. I think he was talking about the Historical Society signs. Oh, he wasn't? He was talking about those.
The signs, yeah. Okay, so we've got a motion on the floor. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Can I get a vote, please?
Hey, can we hear the motion again, please?
Yes.
Talk about a lot of things here.
I'm sorry.
Okay, I'm moving that we, between now and the next meeting, we look at prices for this type of sign. We're going with granite. Right? Granite, arrowhead shaped sign made out of granite. So we're looking for.
Well, granite and zinc.
Granite?
And other materials.
And other materials.
And other materials.
Okay, granite, zinc, and other materials. And I will report at our next meeting.
And so staff is doing this?
And the staff is doing this. I don't know. Actually, I'm not sure. Is that tricky? I will let the staff do this. Okay, good staff.
And we're going to include the mounting costs also.
Would
that be part of the motion?
That's not part of the motion, I don't think. I think
just
the
recommended installment.
Yeah, I think it's just going to be some
installers in a letter or something.
Neighborhood handyman or whoever people use. I don't think we have the ability to do that. I think we have the ability to try to contact a couple of vendors to manufacture them. I think the homeowner is going to use their Uncle Bob or their handyman Nick, right? I mean, that's what they're going to use.
Not a handyman. Good luck.
They're handyman Larry.
If I may contribute, just observer, I'm not a commissioner here. There are methods for attachment that defeat the thieves for if you're using a zinc that are bronze colored.
Right.
We've had that issue at some of the parks where we have plaques, but I know how to mount things. Because I used to mount them on the freeway, and they like to steal things from the freeway, too. There's methods to do it, and I would suggest that they might put together a list of suggested mounting techniques which prevent or limit the amount of theft, especially of the zinc, which looks like brass, which is a commodity that's stolen. There's not a problem with people stealing the granite. Yeah. Just a suggestion that there are methods, and they're out there, commercially available. There's security screws for mounting.
I think that's good because if I spent $300 to $500 on something, I would want to at least as sure as possible to be able to feel safe that it's been mounted in a way that it's going to be a struggle.
And one other thing is there's always a scale of volume for savings. If you have multiple plaques of a given design, they don't have to do this setup, and the price per plaque, if you do 500 of them, it's extremely low.
Well,
versus five.
Yeah, but we've got only about 12 total, and you know it's going to be a tiny percent of those that will want to do it.
Yes. So, do I hear a second to Nick's motion? A
second.
Can I have a vote, please?
Aye.
Alrighty. And that's why it's taking
now, we're not going to continue this until our next meeting.
We're
going to make a final decision.
Next meeting, but so we're looking at other materials.
That's why I asked for the motion, is it to continue until we have this information until our next meeting.
Yes,
is that
sir.
Correct? Thank you.
Okay. So we're going to continue this, you guys.
Yes. The plaque will be in place.
Yay. At least we know that it has passed. That was the main thing. Okay. Other old business. Discussion of demolition.
Oh, Chairman, before we continue,
yes,
I think
sir.
You missed one item. There was four comments from commissioners. I know that Nick had an announcement to make. I think that's before the old business.
Yes, I skipped it. Thank you very much. Okay, let's go back to number six. I'm sorry, you guys. Announcements and reports from commissioners. Commissioner Cataldo.
On April 16th, the San Marino Historical and Pioneer Society, in collaboration with the city, is sponsoring or holding a special event open to the public. It's 100th anniversary rededication of the Soldiers and Sailors Monument. That's at Pioneer Park, which is where the Feldman Library is. And it's the big monument with the Civil War soldier, Union soldiers, standing on top. It was erected on April 15th, 1916, and April 16th, 2016. Rededication. We have some of the participants include the Native Sons of the Golden West.
Bless you.
Which they're going to put a sign.
That's a marker.
A marker. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also the Sons of the Union Veterans of the Civil War will be there. And it's going to be a pretty elaborate event. Starts at 11 o'clock a.m. And San Marino Parks and Community Services involved. Cynthia Alvarado Crawford is involved with making flyers out. And anyway, it should be really good thing. That's it. It certainly is historic preservation and something it's a good thing because it's in honor of our veterans from past wars. Also, the monument. Oh, can I just?
So it's the 16th?
Right, yeah, I think they had the wrong.
Oh, because the flyer, yeah.
The 15th, yeah.
So it's the 15th, okay.
Yeah,
it's
16th.
The actual anniversary is the 15th. But.
Right, yeah, we wouldn't notice that.
Okay.
And the monument, I mean, the monument was erected in 1916 before we were involved in World War I. So the wars were from the American Revolution. Each side of the monument, you haven't seen it, so about the American Revolution and War of 1812, the Mexican-American War, and Spanish-American. And about, I'm not sure what year it was, but we had two plaques that were installed for soldiers that lost their lives during World War I. And those were stolen back in the bronze plaques. They were stolen about a year ago or so. And the Historical Society is sponsoring them. We're actually paying for it, but we're asking for donations to help us out. Steve Shaw, our president of the Historical Society, is going to dedicate a new marker plaque, and it's going to be made out of granite. Should be nice. So that's it.
Thank you. Commissioner Smith?
Oh, okay.
Any announcements? I'm sorry.
Sure. No. In regard to that, when you see a marker, there are some markers already at town. I think there's one by the church, on Fifth Street, Fifth Avenue, if I'm not mistaken. Just so you know, last Wednesday, we installed the marker. We gave a marker to San Bruno High School on their 100th anniversary. That was actually unveiled this last week. So if you drive up and down East Street, you'll see that was their 100th anniversary at that location. So that's been mounted. You know, talking about mounting, we got it mounted. And just briefly, we have, the Nady Sons has such a close relationship with the school district. At one time, we had a gentleman that was actually a janitor at the school system, at the school district. And every time a school was built, he made sure a plaque marker went on the school. So what happened is that they have built like 7 schools here in San Bernardino, the San Bernardino Unified School District, that don't have markers. Well, we received an email. What's so great about it is that the school district that does have money paid for all the plaques. So we're in the process now of dedicating those. And I'll just briefly share with you the schools that we're going to be dedicating. We've already done it in Pacuma, which is a new one in the county up by DeFore. That's a beautiful campus. If you ever go over there, you simply take Glen Helen Parkway and turn left and just continue going left, and you'll run into the campus. Very, very nice. Next Monday, a week from today, we'll be dedicating Norton Elementary School at between 7th and 8th on Mountain View. And then Bob Holcomb Elementary School is going to be on April the 7th. Henry Elementary School, which is in Rialto, but if they're part of the Unified School District, that's going to be on the 25th of April. George Brown, Congressman George Brown, his elementary school is going to be dedicated on the 29th of April. That's at 2525 North G Street. Middle College High School, 1260 West Esperanza in San Bernardino. And the last one is H. Frank Dominguez Elementary School. He's the gentleman that had the veneer tower and passed away about 4 or 5 years ago. And that's at 135 Allen, and that's on May the 9th. And so that's all taken care of. We just recently dedicated Indian Springs High School also, which is at 6th and Del Rosa. So we're busy. I just wanted to share that with the commission.
Thank you. Commissioner Hill?
I have no announcements.
Commissioner Cox?
I have no announcements.
Commissioner Earp?
I have boring work stuff, but no, I have no. Lots of
Commissioner D?
No announcements.
The only thing I have is Colony Park Farmers Market is open for business on Sundays from 10 a.m. to 2 at 140 East Harvick Avenue. That's over by the Rock Church. We're almost in Colton. At one point, we were in this park, was part of Colton. And also, every Thursday, the Farmers Market is downtown from 10 to 2. And then this week will be Food Truck Thursday.
Yay. You guys getting a lot of food trucks these days.
Mm-hmm. And we ask that if you have fruits and vegetables growing in your backyard that you have extras of, you can sell them at the Farmers Market.
Really?
Okay? Yes. Just contact me.
Oh, I have a boatload of dill. Just can't imagine that selling very well. You think I can force people to take it home.
Alrighty, back to the
fish.
What?
It's good on fish.
It is, a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. You can't use pounds of it. That's
yeah,
right.
I know.
Chairman, were you going to announce the recognition of Virginia Marquez today? Are you afraid what happened?
Yes. Councilwoman, I just read that as my mind. Councilwoman Virginia Marquez has been, I just went brain dead.
Recognized,
thank you. As Woman of the Year for the 47th District of the City by Cheryl Brown, she was instrumental during the December 2nd attack. She was there and all the work she's done within the First Ward and within the city. She's one of those council people that doesn't just worry about her ward, she worries about everybody. So that is also...
That's nice.
It is nice.
It was on the assembly floor today.
That's nice.
And I'm proud to say that she did. She's one that put me here. Okay. Back to old business. Let's go back to old business. Discussion of demolition process, Commissioner Smith.
Now, it's my understanding the department has a presentation about that today.
We were going to have a brief discussion by the city attorney's office and by Jody Mansfield. Mm-hmm. We've been over this multiple times. The city does have a demolition ordinance. It doesn't apply to a lot of properties, and I'll briefly go kind of over the history again. So the Donaldson Report, everybody's heard about, completed in 1991. Shortly thereafter, the demolition ordinance was adopted, and then it's been amended a couple of times since then. Merely being in the Donaldson Report does not protect property from demolition. There's about 6,500 to 7,000 properties that are on what's called the tabular list of properties. But there's only about 155 of those properties that meet the criteria of the demolition ordinance whereby a historic resources evaluation report needs to be prepared. So if you own one of those 155 plus or minus properties, you have to prepare a demolition or a historic resources survey report, which then comes to HPC for your review, whether or not the building should be demolished. And this body then forwards their recommendation to the Planning Commission, which would make a final determination, unless that gets appealed to the City Council. It automatically goes to the council if HPC and the Planning Commission both deny demolition. The council has final word.
I do really appreciate that you send us all of the things that are happening now. That is really nice to get that.
Yeah, we are, and I've said this, you know, my staff, we're all fully committed to getting as much information out to the community as we can. We wish we could do more. We wish we had a more robust communications department. We don't. We have one individual, Monica Lagos, that some of you may know. She's trying to do communications for everything the city is doing, and that's a big chore.
Yeah.
So we do send out the monthly update. We also have a quarterly newsletter that the department works on. And then we brought, maybe two or three meetings ago, there was a demolition that didn't meet the criteria, but I brought that forward to the commission just so you knew what kind of the review process was.
Yeah.
So yes, we are trying to get out as much information as we can. So that was really all we were going to do, and I know Henry Impeño, when he was in the city attorney's office, was here and confirmed, you know, what the demolition ordinance applies to and what it doesn't apply to. So, and Jody Mansfield, who is the code enforcement division manager, does have one individual who is responsible for heading up demolitions, because we do have a lot of fire damaged, vacant, and abandoned buildings all over town. And what I've heard in the 2 years that I've been here is we need to get those properties cleared because they're a haven for transients.
Yeah. Yes.
So my question is this. How do we know what 155 properties fall underneath that?
They are, we have flagged all of them in our system, and there are, I believe most of you have copies, if not all of you have copies of the Donaldson report. So it's anything which is in Volume 3, Appendix B, for which there was a modified Department of Parks and Recreation 523 form. But for those of you who have seen these forms,
Appendix 3?
Volume 3, Appendix B.
B, okay.
Yes.
Or in the larger report, sorry, Mark, that has an asterisk okay. next to it,
okay.
is in this book.
Yeah. So these forms, and I can take one out and show it to you, they're two-sided. You're supposed to have details of the property, a little bit of historical information on who the original architect and or contractor was, and anybody significant who lived. You know, Sandy Olivas, when she moves out, will say that she lived here. She was chair of HPC, so we should protect her house. Sorry to pick on you, Sandy. You're sitting in front of me. It's what happens to Oliver and Lisa and me more often. But these forms were, I mean, with all due respect to what was done in 1991, they're horribly incomplete.
Oh, yeah. They're done very quickly.
They're horribly incomplete.
Yeah,
so it's... It would be difficult, I think, for us to take some action on these based upon the limited information that we have. All that being said, the ordinance does say if you're Volume 3B and there's a modified 523 form, then you have to prepare. Or if you're within one of the 13 potential historic neighborhoods that were also identified in the 1991 report. And we have flagged those in our permit system so that when somebody comes to the counter, the property pops up, and then the permit technician knows that they need to go back and do a little bit more research before they just issue a demolition permit over the counter.
Is there a certain timeline that's attached to that?
There are some timelines about the time that it takes that the commission has to review and forward a recommendation to the planning commission, and then in which the planning commission has to take action. And we can resend the demolition ordinance. It's not very lengthy. I know that it's been transmitted a couple of times, but we'd be happy to, we can email it again. The city, I've admitted, and I think everybody agrees, doesn't have a lot of ordinances in place or protections in place for historic resources.
So basically, if one of these came before us and we voted no, we didn't want it torn down, it can go to the Planning Commission.
Right.
And they can say, forget it, it's coming down, and it's going to come down.
That's the way the ordinance is written.
All we have is a recommendation.
Power is vested with the Planning Commission.
So we can recommend to the Planning Commission, and then from there, the Planning Commission can recommend. Or Planning Commission.
Well, if the Planning Commission has...
Decide,
as the chair just said, if the Planning Commission if you said no, if the commission's recommendation was to preserve, and the commission's recommendation was not to preserve, to issue the demolition permit, the action stops there. If the commission said, if the commission said no, the property should be preserved as well, then the council has to confirm that action.
In other words, bylaws. I mean, basically, it says that.
That's the law. That's the one advisory
is that we're advisory to the planning commission.
Yeah, that's it.
That is correct.
And that's it.
Right.
Strictly advisory.
Right. And then, as Lisa has pointed out, the in cases of imminent threat to life and safety, public health and safety, the building official can issue an emergency demolition permit.
So if a house gets partially burned down, for instance, they can go ahead and tear the rest of it down.
Yes.
Or if a roof's caving in on a building that may need to, okay, and it won't come to us. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So it come down during
the I have freely admitted we don't have a lot of protections for historic resources. At the same time, to do this more complete program is several hundred thousand dollars because you have to build community support, because at the end of the day, what we're doing is we're potentially denying somebody or limiting somebody's use of their property.
Yeah.
So
then you have to have a political will to do that.
Right. Right, and it really is a grassroots effort. I've been in two cities where it was not a grassroots effort, and the council, you know, when 40 people show up at the council meeting and say, "You're taking away my property rights," in those two cities, the council said, "We will never do historic preservation again." And one of those cities, I just read in the newspaper, they're finally getting back to doing a historic preservation ordinance, and I was there in 1985. And they're finally coming back and saying that they should do it.
So if like Sandbag or the school district, say, no, where they built the Norton School, there was a historical thing done on those houses in that area. All the pictures were taken. It's at the Historical Society.
Wait, which one's that?
Where Norton Elementary is.
Mountain View.
Yeah. There was one done there. But it seems like Sandbag and the school district, when they get something in their heads, there's nothing you can do to stop them. Like Alan said, the palm trees that were moved and planted over by the depot, Sandbag torn, cut them down. They were moved there to preserve them because they were old. And they still went through and took them down. And it seems like Sandbag and the school district, it doesn't matter. It just does not matter what any of us have to say about anything.
To that point, the school district is a separate government entity. So they are subject to CEQA, but they are not subject to local zoning requirements.
Yeah.
So they can, through their own CEQA review process, just like the city, if we do a public works project, we have to do a CEQA review. Some people say, well, it's the chicken guarding the hen house or the fox guarding the hen house, because we both prepare the report and then review and approve it and say this isn't historically significant to do the demolition. Or they would, as the school district did in the Norton case, they identified it as a resource, but one of the ways to mitigate it is through documentation.
Mm-hmm. Well, just like the Charador Company was torn down.
Yeah, so by Sandbag. I would say that the Charador Company building was not in the volume 3 of the
right.
It was not.
I don't know, because that happened just as I was
coming on,
starting with the city.
Okay.
I do know that it was identified in the final EIR for demolition.
Mm-hmm.
So somewhere along the line, somebody felt that it was potentially significant because it was identified in the final EIR for the railroad.
Yeah, before we get our underwear on knot, here's the truth. Do they even know we exist?
No.
Who is this?
Sandbag or the school district or anybody? I mean, we'd fly real low in this town.
Well, yeah, and that's why we're going to have a discussion on speaking. and honestly, how many commissioners on the planning commission know about us? that we're even
underneath.
Well, you know one. But, I mean, that you know about us within your commission that we're an advisory.
I know that they are aware that it exists because I've brought it to them. Okay. But as to the role, I don't know if they fully understand it's just an advisory, because the Planning Commission is not an advisory, it's quasi-judicial. So we make rulings that, that are contestable possibly in court.
Right. Right. It's a building
commission. I think we're the only ones that's advisory to the other commission. The other commissions are lateral.
Well, the other commissions are advisory to the council. The Planning Commission and BBC are the only two that have power to actually make a final determination unless that gets appealed to the council.
And the Historic Preservation is the only one that's not advisory to the council, it's advisory to the commission.
For demolition purposes, only you're advisory to the Planning Commission. For other purposes, you're advisory to the council.
And I will bring that up Wednesday at our Planning Commission meeting.
Thank you.
Make sure everybody's aware of this currently on the commission.
Just so everybody knows, Larry is the chairman of the Planning Commission. I just invite him to come out to hear from us, you know, basically what we do, so we can clarify all of the what the process is. And I guess my main concern about demolition, you know, many of us have lived here our entire lives, and everybody knows about, this goes way before we even had a Historical Preservation Commission. It was started by Chas Kelly when he was, and Nick, of course, is his, well, I don't know if he appointed you.
He appointed me, yeah.
Right. So you've been, weren't your original?
Since 07.
It was since 07, right. So you have a lot of it. But the point I'm making is that prior to 07, the Atwood Adobe was just, we just woke up one morning and it was gone. And that's always been a concern of my council person, you know, Fred Charette, who's been around forever, too. He just basically doesn't want that to happen within the city of San Bernardino. So we're almost like in the hen house, you know, we're guarding the hen house to make sure that that doesn't happen. I guess what I'm simply asking, and of course we even talked about maybe having a workshop or something. I don't know if that's really necessary right now. But I would like to ask the commissioners if you're comfortable with the process that we have right now. We can't really change it a lot for financial reasons, but let's go back to the original premise. Do you all feel safe that that's not going to happen again, you know, that we're going to wake up one morning and a historical structure will be demolished?
I guess my only question is, if it's in Volume 3, Appendix B, it should be safe, but if it's not...
Historical neighborhood districts.
Historical district. But if it's not in it, you know, I don't know what properties are not in Volume 3, Appendix B, that, you know, then I'd be concerned.
Would that be the list that...
I don't know what that is.
The director sends out.
Well, for instance, Arrowhead Springs Hotel has been annexed into the city's...
So that wasn't in the...
It's not in there.
Right. Yeah, actually, that would be...
I mean, it's a private property, and the owners can simply say it's shuttered up, so it's just getting slowly destroyed.
Sure. How do we get? Is there a way that we can get, say, that property there? Get that? Well, we can't go back to 1991, but I mean, how do we?
No, we have.
Is there anything we can do? I mean,
yes. The only thing we can do is designate it as a national historic place, like we did the California Theater.
Yeah, right. National Register.
Yeah.
Do right. There are national registers and state registers that individuals can petition that another property get put on, or your own property that you own.
But here's my thing. Like with the Arrowhead Springs Hotel, I think that many people recognize that as a historic thing. I think we're much more in danger of losing some of the buildings downtown that were former pawn shops and are closed up now. You know, that oldest...
The Gardner Block.
That's exactly... Now, that is in real danger of getting plowed down.
It's not in good shape. You know, the longer something is abandoned.
Yes, but it's the oldest building, commercial building in town. I mean, somebody's going to come along and propose something to us that's going to be big and flashy and have glitter on it, and the Planning Commission...
Well, the thing of it is, too, is like Mark said, if it, a building, a code enforcement officer, code enforcement officer, could go in and deem the building unsafe.
The building official.
Yeah, actually, the building official can go in and deem the building is not safe. And so it would come down without us doing anything about it.
You got it. That's true, too.
And you know, honestly, the question Commissioner Smith asked, am I comfortable? Not necessarily. But do I trust my city? Yeah. You know, because within these guidelines, I know that like, something's not going to come down. Like, the Gardner building's not going to come down unless it's deemed unsafe.
Yes, but how many people on the Planning Commission or that are involved in the city even know about the Gardner building?
I think that again, anything that they don't necessarily need to know today, because if it's potentially significant to us identified in the Donaldson report, they have to do a historic resources survey report.
That should be in that section. That should be in a volume 3.
I would believe that building is. Does anybody know the address of it? I don't know the address of it.
362, 364.
D Street.
D Street. 362, 64, 66.
Oh, it's 53rd.
It's by assessor. Right, it's 53rd.
So don't make it easy for him. That's it.
Easy. I've seen in there. I know what section that is. Called a garter block.
Yeah, it's right here.
Well, thank goodness.
So it then, if somebody were to come in for a demolition permit, they would be subject to the demolition ordinance, which would require that they hire a consultant to prepare the report that comes to this body. You would then forward your recommendation to the Planning Commission.
So if it needed to go to the Planning Commission within 2 weeks, would there be an emergency meeting call?
It's not 2 weeks. I think it's 45 days.
Oh, 45 days. Yeah. Well, if something came to you tomorrow, we still would meet. We basically meet every 60 days. So something.
No, it's 45 days from the time, I believe, 45 days from the time that you forward your recommendation to
Okay.
I'm doing this for memory, so.
That makes it a little more clear.
Well, and the other piece that scares me, to tell you the truth, Sandra, is Mark has been our best director. Mm-hmm. We'll all agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but
thank you.
I've been here for 9 years. Yeah. Nick and I have been here for 9 years, and how many directors have we gone through? Many, many, many. Mm-hmm. And it takes a while for the directors to know what's up.
Every time we meet.
And so, I mean, we can all sit here and be very comfortable with Mark's leadership.
Right.
But the reality of the situation is that...
Who do we get next?
We're hoping Mark stays forever.
Yes, we are. Or maybe his clone. That's going to be fine.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a difficult problem. But Nick and I mean, you have to... The reality is that the faces on that side of the table have changed a lot, except for Lisa.
And we were actually talking about that this morning, because Oliver is going to start being the regular. I'm still going to be here, but Oliver's going to be the regular staff person with Lisa. And Lisa was saying that exact same thing, that she's been the one constant over the last 5, 6, 7 years.
Yes.
Yeah.
But we've had a lot of lots and lots of changes.
Right,
so,
I understand that, yes.
You know, so that scares me, because we can sit here and be comfortable today, and everything changes tomorrow.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Well, they are flagged in the system, so there are some protections, even if I get hit by a car tonight on the way home.
Oh, don't.
Oh, jeez.
I'm not planning on it.
Okay, thank you.
My life's not perfect, but I like it. I like the way it is. So we have tried to do what we can with the limited tools available. So.
Yeah, one example of a demolition that happened because of earthquake was, I'm sure sure we're very familiar with what happened in the city of Highland. There are actually three historical buildings that went down because of earthquake. I don't think they have a historical preservation commission. They have a historical society over there, which is
they have a society.
Different a society, but I don't think they have a governmental agency that they actually go to. So,
yeah, I don't think so.
That was pretty much just, I mean, they really had no option.
But in an earthquake, the building official's going to order a building to be demolished.
Yeah.
So I think in the case of an earthquake, it's just going to happen with or without a commission.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the truth is, if we have an earthquake in California, theater's going to fall down.
Yes, it is.
And then we're all going to say, let's just tear it down because it's too
right.
far gone.
Right.
We cannot right. save it.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
That is the
reality. The Selmar earthquake and then the Northridge mm-hmm. earthquake and Whittier and Narrows. The city, uptown Whittier, was decimated from the Whittier and Narrows earthquake.
Right.
You know, and it really
they're
is.
Now just recovering from the Whittier and Narrows earthquake, which happened in 1971. No, Whittier and Narrows. That was Selmar.
Selmar, 71.
Yeah, okay. I think Whittier and Narrows was like 84.
94.
Northridge was 94.
I think we all feel like we don't want to have anything else lost, certainly. But we do need more teeth.
Right.
Yeah.
And as I've said, I hate to sound like a broken record, but the commissioners are the best ones to get out and talk to their friends, talk to their neighbors, talk to the council. It really needs to be a grassroots effort. In the city where I live, the community rallied around when there was an old historic YMCA building that was demolished. And that's what caused everything to come into place. When that one building was demolished, the community had finally said, we've had enough. But it can't be from staff. It can't be from the council. It really has to be a grassroots effort. It's got to come from the community.
Community, right.
And you folks all know more people than we do. So it really is talking to your friends and your neighbors and asking them how they would feel and starting to, slowly build where there's a groundswell of support, where the council finally does feel that there's the desire or the demand in the community, whatever you call it, to spend. Again, it's going to be $250,000 to do the survey, to do the community outreach. It's not just we'll borrow Riverside's ordinance or we'll borrow Redlands' ordinance. Because again, what if you said, whether I think it was the chair said, at the end of the day, we're talking about impacting people's property rights and property values.
And it gets,
it gets very, very personal. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to go slowly, I guess.
I would like to.
So, Marcia,
back in. It was October. I had the opportunity to go to Kentucky through my T-Bone Association and NHSIE, National Housing.
Right.
Okay. And one of the tours that I took when I was on that trip back there was to, they called the city New Albany.
Okay.
And it was a comeback. And the city was like San Bernardino is now.
Right.
And they brought the city back and revitalized it with their historic property. So I don't have the paperwork with me. I can look in my materials that I had and bring it to the next meeting. But if somebody wants to go online maybe and look to see how it was they did it, because one of the things that really impressed me was the fact that they said they did all of their historic preservation stuff, like with the National Register and what have you, when the city is where we are in a worse state than what we're at now. So I thought that was something kind of interesting.
One of the most positive things I've got to say about San Bernardino in history is the Historical Society.
Is what?
The Historical Society.
Yes.
They are a fine historical society. And I'm wondering if there's a way to use that Historical Society to give a 2-minute update every single time they meet about just a little nugget of why historic preservation is important. Because there you got your audience, and we could be cheerleaders for this if we wanted to.
I don't even want to talk, so.
So yeah, wait at every meeting just for a couple minutes talk about the importance of.
And you could get, we could, I mean,
idea.
I mean. you know, we could team do that. Like, we could just pick out a building every single time, or some subject and say, you know.
Or did you maybe talk, well, we could do a little history behind it, or just a...
Just a tiny little piece so that everybody pretty soon would recognize how much historical significance there is in this town.
Sure.
And then you've got a population that when something or other does happen, they have a little bit of education behind them and enthusiasm.
Don't, people don't know about certain buildings.
Yes.
And
we get hot.
Like Mark said, you know, the community needs to let the council know. You know, they need to, air out their voices. I mean, your voices, you know, what they want. If nobody says anything, there's a greater chance of it being just torn down.
So we need to educate the public, and we've got a great venue to do it.
We need the squeaky wheel to be turned.
Well, I think we're fortunate on the city council. We have just, except for the one council person, all of the members are either born here or were raised in California. Even the new one that just came in, Basine, was born in San Bernardino, and Virginia Marcus was born in San Bernardino. Many of them know that history too. So
we need a new Thelma Press.
So that's to our advantage.
That's good. Yeah, you want people that to embrace our town. People that from here or even spent most of their lives here that really like or love San Bernardino.
And they're attending the Historical Society.
Yeah, we make big crowds every month.
Yes.
Right.
So that concludes our report, Chair.
Okay. Any further discussion?
Well, I just wanted to indicate that I think because of cost constraints, there's a lot of reasons, but I think that's the main one, and I appreciate Mark sending that information out to us. I think, and I know that we have some new commissioners, so if it would be appropriate, it doesn't cost anything, basically, to email the devolution process. If you could send it to the council people or to the commissioners, I think that would be appropriate, and then we'll all know where we are. And I think we basically need to accept where we are right now before we move on. Before we close this, I'd like to find out, as the chairman of the Planning Commission, do you have any other further thoughts about this discussion, Mark?
In regards to the Donaldson report, as far as concern over properties that are not listed, as I described to you, Commissioner Smith, if this commission or this historical society wishes to put together a list or a quantifiable reasoning behind what would be considered to be a historically significant building within the city of San Bernardino, that list should be developed, put together, and provided to the director so that they know what the society and what this commission thinks in terms of what is historically significant for the city of San Bernardino. So, you know, that's something that should be done, and I'm pretty sure that some other cities have already done that.
So
they've made a list of quantifiable items that would point towards a structure.
Okay, why is it historical?
Why would it, you know, here's a list. It's got to be at this such an age. It's got to have this type of history in it. It's quantifiable.
The demolition ordinance actually has those criteria for determination of historic significance. Actually, is in the ordinance, as you're mentioning. It has 10 criteria.
Awesome.
And maybe this commission should review that in detail and see if maybe a modification of that ordinance might be due, changing circumstances within the city. As we all get older. That was drafted in 91, or 90 probably, voted on in 91?
Yeah, it was originally adopted in 1989, updated in 91, and then most recently in 2009.
So it may or may not be current with today's thinking by this commission or the Historical Society. That's my only contribution.
Appreciate that information. Good recommendation. That's all I have.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Anybody? All righty, so let's go on to new business. The next one is commission appointments, appointment and absence, commission at large. I know the sixth ward just received a new council person, so we'll cut her a little bit of slack for a minute. And then Councilman Valdivia, Mr. Figueroa hasn't been here, and it's because of his work schedule. I saw him recently. So if you're excused for how many times?
Three consecutive unexcused absences.
Yeah, it's three unexcused, but if you're working, that's always been considered an excused absence. But how long, my personal opinion, how long do you keep letting this go before you say, you know what, councilman, you probably need to appoint somebody else?
It's temporary. I mean, if it's...
After they go three times without attending...
Because that's 6 months.
You were talking a long time.
Yeah, the municipal code actually has, and I've been trying to meet with Gigi on this and just haven't been able to connect with her. But the municipal code actually gives the chair the authority to declare vacancies after three unexcused absences.
Okay.
I
unexcused, though.
Correct.
But everybody's excused?
I think that somebody has to determine what is excused.
Except
I got a hangnail, you know, on my mouth.
Except, Sandra, how I would approach it would be to approach the council person and say, we have a concern about a commissioner who has been absent three times and we would like you to consider replacing that person so our commission is more effective.
How am I going to be nice about this?
Like that.
This has happened actually before. And
The
process we've gone
through,
the chair... It was responsible of the chair to contact the council person and just explain what
it is. That is what the municipal code
says.
It is awkward.
Which is why I think Commissioner Herb's suggestion of a phone call or an email before a formal letter is probably advisable.
Okay.
I mean, if it's going to lead to a great big fight and you're going to get down to nitty-gritty about excused, unexcused, and all that kind of stuff, really, the problem is 6 months is a long time not to be on the commission. It makes the commission very ineffective. And when you explain that to a council person, they get it.
And there's been more than 6 months.
Yeah.
Does it have to be excused or unexcused? Can it just be three absences consecutive?
Well, I mean...
I think it says three unexcused absences. You know.
But things happen.
Because, if you haven't...
Well, again, the municipal code, and I'll read it here, and I can send this to you, Chair. It's Chapter 2.17.060. Does give the chair the authority. It says if a member of any board, bureau, or commission, I don't know if we have any bureaus, that's how old this is, fails to attend three consecutive regular meetings without excuse from the chairman, which excuse must be obtained within 5 calendar days before the meeting, he or she shall automatically, so it's not even a requirement, shall automatically, nobody needs to take action, cease to be a member of the board, bureau, or commission. And the chair of such board, bureau, or commission shall notify the former member and the nominating official of the declared vacancy. The vacant office shall be filled by nomination and appointment made in the manner of the original appointment.
I never know who's going to be here. I never get notified about anybody not attending. So,
I mean, if you perceive after a conversation with a council person it's going to be a huge fight, then we can talk about that as commission, decide what we need to do from that point.
And we can certainly, to your point, Chair, we can certainly implore all of the commissioners to notify. We don't know 5 days in advance either.
Mm-hmm.
that they notify, will be able to cite this chapter and say that they should, that they need to notify the chair and staff. We request that they notify the chair and staff 5 days prior to the meeting. Although some of you may not know your schedule that
right.
far in advance, so.
But I just know in the past we've had a sticky situation, and it probably took a year and a half to replace a county commissioner because the council person fought it.
Through the chair, I also handed out all of this information previously.
Right.
You know, the Muni Code sections, your bylaws for state attendance, the demo ordinance. If you would like it again, I'm happy to send it out again. But it has been sent out.
Yeah, I've got it right here.
And I'd like to commend Lisa because we certainly know when the meeting is. Mm-hmm. There's no, his staff is doing an excellent job of laying the commissioner's stone when we meet. And she's actually had us ask us to indicate if the fact would be there. So I think if we, and you're in, Mark certainly is in close touch with the chairman. So if we notify Lisa, then you know, I think it'd be appropriate to let her know because if you get some indication like last time, unfortunately, we didn't have a quorum, and that's another reason.
Right. Yeah,
we know. You know,
it's
it'd be nice for all the commissioners to know that hey, we're not going to have a quorum, and it would say, you know.
Well, I'll take some responsibility for that. I was under the impression that Sandy posting the agenda at her out of city location. Met the quorum requirements. I found out after talking to the city attorney that wasn't the case. You had to have a quorum of
here.
Members present in the jurisdiction. So had you been at your house in San Bernardino, that would have qualified, but because you were out of the city, it didn't qualify. So I'll take some responsibility for that one.
And through the chair, also, because we don't meet every month, I've talked to Mark about sending a reminder the month in between the meetings, giving you a draft agenda, and asking for roll call at that time. I can then email the chair letting her know if quorum is met or not. But that's based on that day.
Yeah, it's based on that day. Anything can happen 3 days before something.
Or it would be 30 days, because it would be the month in between.
And I'm curious about the new, well, maybe it's not a new rule. Maybe we've all been violating this rule forever about the, we can't let everybody know. Because I know that you put that on your email now.
Yeah. That's
always
just a bad been
commission.
That way.
Oh, it's always
it's
been
always
that way.
Been that way. Yes.
Okay. I'm just curious, like, oh, okay.
Violation of the Brown Act?
Yes. It could be easily perceived as a serial meeting.
Wow.
Yes. So
okay. It's not a big deal. I'm glad you always
need to be very, very careful with email. I had one city attorney say that they wished that reply all wasn't a feature in Outlook, so people didn't get reply all.
All right, well, I'm glad you put that notice on.
Okay.
So there's not much more to say about that item from staff's standpoint, at least.
Okay. Any further comments?
No. Did Commissioner Figueroa, does he want to come? Is his schedule going to change, or is it just indefinite? He's just probably going to be a no-show indefinitely?
Yeah.
He says he wants to come back.
No, it's his work schedule. There's just no way he can do it with his
I wouldn't
work
think
schedule.
He'd have a problem with stepping down. Or, you know,
I guess it sounds like it's a temporary thing for a couple of weeks, but it sounds like it's
not. It's a permanent thing.
It's a permanent
well,
thing.
To me, it's a no-brainer. I don't think it makes sense.
Okay, that's all I have.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
Is the chair asking him if he's if he would resign? Means he can't make it.
You can ask him.
Yeah.
That would be the first step. That's a step I've used in the past when we had a commissioner that was tied up. Is we ask him, hey, if you can't do this, maybe you should resign. Tell your council person or your appointing power, and ask them to appoint somebody else. Because if you're not going to be here, what's the point of being a commissioner?
And you don't have a foreseeable future. Don't see yourself cutting. That doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty, let's move on to the next item. The Mount Vernon Bridge Project. I wanted this put on the agenda because there's been, I have some concerns, and my concerns would be that what kind of, what's the new bridge going to look like? Is it going to fit into the style of the area? Because that is very old in that area. What else are they going to tear down, take out, you know, that may be a problem? I just kind of, I think what I really want is kind of an update on it. I've been to council meetings and seen and hear what's going to happen with it and stuff, but I do have some, I do not trust Sandbag as far as I can throw them, because I think they do not take in consideration anything but what they want. And that's a personal opinion. Because like I said, there were palm trees planted over at the depot to save them because they were old, and they tore them out. They just come down. And they're an old posters.
That's true.
And so that's why I don't trust them. That they, that it's what Sandbag wants. It's not what works for the area.
Is a Historic Preservation Commission, is there anything you can do?
Well, the council just directed Public Works to work with Sandbag to actually have Sandbag take over the Mount Vernon Bridge project. So it is about to become a Sandbag project. Because it's Public Works, I'm only tangentially involved in this. But yes, it is obviously a significant historic structure. The train depot is a significant historic landmark in the city. And I think the commission is appropriate to be concerned about what Sandbag will or won't do about the historic nature of the bridge. But that's the direction of the council, so that I don't believe that contract has actually come back to the council yet, but they have asked staff to work with Sandbag so that they could become the project manager, because from a, and this is one of those issues, historic preservation versus public safety. We apparently have been told by Caltrans 20 plus years ago that the bridge is unsafe and that the bridge needs to be replaced. And that obviously hasn't happened, and I don't know all of the history. I do know the former city engineer had spent a considerable amount of time with Sandbag on mostly finance issues, because it is a very, very expensive capital improvement project that is completely unfunded. Well, I shouldn't say completely, it's significantly underfunded. I don't know how much the gap is, but it's a pretty significant gap, which is, I think, the council's idea behind having Sandbag manage the project, then it might be more eligible for the Measure I funds, the regional trip improvement funds, and I think regardless of what people think of Sandbag from a construction management standpoint, they at least have the construction management down. Maybe not the historic preservation, not to disparage them, but they are largely engineers, so they look at, no disrespect, they look at things from an engineering standpoint. You know, if square works, let's do square. Why do we need to do anything else?
Right.
And that's just, I think, I'm not talking out of school here, that's what all engineers do.
Yep. I'm married to one.
Right. So
it's got to work first.
So it is, I think, something that the commission should be concerned about. Again, it might be appropriate for the chair to write a letter on behalf of the commission to the mayor and to the council, so that the council is aware of what the commission's concerns are. I mean, that would be my recommendation, at least as a starting point.
Well, I mean, because I could, that kind of ties in with the next item of commissioners speaking on behalf of the commission. I know that they're, like, when this came in front of the city council with Sandbag and stuff, I know I wanted to get up out of my chair and say, as a chair of the Historical Preservation Commission, I would like to know this, 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 and this, so I could report it back to the commission. But I can't stand up and do that without permission from the commission to stand up and do that. And we never know what's going to be on the agenda. Where, I mean, there's been times where, like, the new ordinance that just got passed that affects the Historical Preservation Commission and the BBC, the new ordinance that got passed, that there was a couple of public hearings. It's been a month ago.
You're talking about our new code compliance?
Yes.
Ordinance?
Yeah. What I'm saying is that I was compelled to stand up and speak, but I didn't have permission from the commission to.
Right.
Do you see what I'm saying? So that's where it's really, really kind of hard. Because I know, like, Commissioner Smith is at several council meetings as well, and I know there's times that when things come up about that have to do with historical preservation, that if he was there, he could speak on it. Or if I was there, I could speak on it. Or
Do you see what I'm saying?
Right. And that's where I'm finding some real...
So you want to be where any one of us, if we come go to a meeting,
we can speak
on behalf of the commission.
Right.
Without
that kind of makes
me
uncomfortable.
No, well, I mean, it's on the issue, but that's what I'm saying is that what's really, really hard, because a lot of times things pass in this city, and
you don't have time to,
and that we don't meet, we don't know what's on the agenda until
we meet every 2 months.
Friday.
72 hours.
72 hours before that. Sometimes this commission should be talking about this, some of this stuff.
Could I comment briefly? Because I think, have they not changed the notification? Is it just, I know they've expanded the time that it has to go, does that just affect when the city council people receive the agenda? I think they moved it back to a week.
There is, starting in April, that is the schedule that the city clerk has laid out, although staff hasn't seen that schedule yet. But yes, the council did adopt new guidelines for agenda preparation, which talk about making material available to the council a week in advance.
But that has nothing to do with the 72-hour.
That's all the city clerk's responsibility, so I don't know.
Okay.
I kind of follow what Gigi tells me to do.
but it's just like if Commissioner Smith saw something on the agenda that concerned him, there would only be so many people he could contact, or the Brown Act would be, you know. So I'm just trying to figure out what we can do when something pops up on an agenda that we need to have a discussion, I don't know. That's just my frustration at this point.
Well,
just like the Mount Vernon Bridge.
But you can speak. Okay, but on the Mount Vernon Bridge, why didn't you draft a letter, send it to us? We can either say, that's Brown Act.
That is correct. That would be violating
Brown
Act.
That's the frustrations.
You can speak on behalf of
yourself.
Sandy, Olivas, citizen, resident.
That's what I was going to say.
Or say you're with the historian.
I mean, Sandy, I trust you, but the truth is...
I understand that, but I'm not just saying me. I'm saying
anybody.
Yeah. If Dee catches something on the agenda.
But you can't speak to it as a citizen.
Okay.
Sandra Owen Olivas stand up speak as a citizen compared to Sandra Owen Olivas commissioner is a lot different.
Well, you can identify yourself as a chairman when you get up there. So that, I mean, that would come.
Oh, you say that.
You just don't speak on behalf of.
And then
can stand up and say, I am a commissioner on the Historic Preservation Commission.
And I'm not
speaking on my own behalf.
But I'm speaking, okay, thank you. That's Phoenicia.
What am I
just clarifying that?
Yeah, okay, well, thanks, everybody. I didn't know how to handle that.
Since Larry's here, why don't we ask what their process is? Larry, what is your process of speaking on the agendized item on the plan?
Just identified. You can send it to your commissioner on a planning commission, but you're speaking for yourself only. You do not represent your planning commission. I don't represent the planning commission.
Well,
At that point in time, I'm representing Larry Heasley.
Okay, so you get your point across.
Get your point across, and they know that sure. You identify as to who you are. That does, I don't think it makes any difference whether you say that you're a planning commissioner or Buddha's son. Yeah. Doesn't make any difference to the council. As far as the relative worth of your statement.
I think you haven't had an issue with that. I mean, that's just basically...
No.
Okay.
Okay. I just didn't know how to go, because there's like the Mount Vernon Bridge project, there was the new ordinance, there...
Well, back to the Mount Vernon Bridge, if I may interrupt. Yes. Is that something that the commission wants to take a motion on, to have the chair put together a letter?
Yeah. I mean,
sneaky door, aren't you?
Well, I mean, it's here on the agenda, so you guys need to decide, because the last thing I want is 2 years from now go, we never weighed in on that.
I mean,
and you know what, remember.
As the wife of an engineer, I want the bridge to function first. But I don't want them to lose the aesthetics, the historic aesthetics of the location. Mm-hmm. And to please consider the historic aesthetics of the location when designing the bridge. I think that's reasonable. It's a reasonable thing to ask.
So when I'm questioning tearing down the bridge.
Oh, no. The aesthetics.
It needs to be tore down.
I just think we're asking for some, consideration to the historic.
Yeah, with a cement, historical theme. I mean,
Do we know that has not been done?
We don't know.
Professional surgeon.
I mean, maybe they have a break plan for.
Would we want to extend an invitation for them to maybe provide us with a presentation about
They're never
gonna where they're going?
But I do think a letter.
That could be part of the letter if that's the commission's desire.
Yeah, we could say, come talk to us about it. We would love to see your plans. But they probably won't. I mean, I think we have to recognize that. Mm-hmm. But I do think it would be a nice idea to write a letter and say.
And this would be a letter to the mayor.
Okay.
So I that my recommendation, and then because the mayor does sit on the sandbag board, and then the mayor can carry the commission's comments forward.
Just say
again, that's just my recommendation.
Just say we would love to see the historic significance of this area reflected in the bridge remain.
That's good.
I mean, I know they can do it because they built one down on Baseline.
I would suggest that when you send that to them, that you have a goal of appearance of what you want it to look like, rather than just recognize the historical significance, which is really about this narrow. So if you send it to an engineer, say, hey, we would like it to look like this on the railings or this on the lighting, something in that manner would be more meaningful to somebody that's in the process of doing a design, because all the appurtenances that which would be historically significant on appearances are not structural issues anyhow.
Yes.
The structure is going to be the structure, and it's what you want as far as the appurtenances and details. And sandbag is not negative towards that. Look at the 215 project in DeVore. DeVore people, a small group of people,
sure,
asked for it, and they've got two. A very expensively constructed monuments right there at DeVore Road, one in each direction, recognizing DeVore.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm.
And, sandbag is not all negative. It's just you have to get their attention.
Yeah, I think if we wrote a letter to explain why, and then we had exactly what we see in that bridge as being significant, we would get a lot further.
And you're going to be able to come to agreement on that, so it can be distilled to a letter.
Yeah, let's hope so. Because the plaques only took about 7 years.
So. the bridge would be done.
I mean, I'm not trying to be facetious here.
I just think that
and
they
also
have to go through a CEQA process, and they have to go through a NEPA process, which is the National Environmental Policy Act, because there will be both state and federal money. So I think that it might be worth just calling out the historic significance and the need and the desire to protect the historic significance of the bridge and the community. Let them try to figure out how to solve that once I think you are in the environmental review process with your very legitimate concerns. The burden transfers to them, and they will have multiple historic preservation experts that can do a better job, I think, do a better job of saying this meets the commission's concerns.
And the other piece of that is for all of us to really go look at the bridge. What is it about this bridge that we want to see saved? Mm-hmm. Is it the lighting? Is it the railing? Is it, what is it? Is it the shape of it? And then we can actually address that in the letter.
So how long do you think we have to draft this letter, Mark?
I would say
by next meeting.
Well, the commission, the council meets on the 21st and then meets on April 4th, I believe, April 7th. I don't know if you're
April 4th.
The sooner the better, because that contract is about to be signed, transferring all of the design responsibilities and project management responsibilities to Sandbag. So, I think maybe if you could provide direction to general direction, maybe to the chair, that for the time being, that might be the best way to go.
Okay. Either that, or could we each at our leisure visit the bridge and maybe just make a mental note of the things that we would like to see preserved and then send it in an email to her so she's...
Can't do that, Brandon.
Well, if you send it to staff, we can kind of distill those down.
Yeah.
Send them to Lisa and I. Send
the
them to me.
Send them to Mark.
And Oliver.
And then we will try to distill those down. But I do think that getting a letter to the council, to the mayor, and it may not need to be at a meeting now that I'm talking out loud. It may not need to be at a meeting. Maybe it's just it can go to the mayor, but it should be done before a meeting, before this contract is signed. So again, I think timing is important.
So you think it'll be April 4th when it goes back to it?
I don't recall, again, because I haven't been directly involved in it.
Alright.
But I think the sooner the better.
The only reason I want to speak, Chairman, just briefly, and I'm not speaking against the letter at all, but I know that it's in transition right now. He indicated that the letter go to the mayor. Evidently, the mayor is also on the Sandbag board. So regardless of which way it goes, then he would have that input. Is that your suggestion why it should go to the mayor?
Yes, and because he can then, he represents the council, and he sits on the Sandbag board, and when this item does come to the council, and I think it's a good practice to copy all of the council members on the letter so that they're aware of it, so that when the contract comes before them, they can say,
oh, yeah.
Oh, and by the way, we want to make sure that this gets addressed.
Absolutely.
And then it's in with all the stuff that Sandbag's going to inherit, and when they have to go through all the reviews.
Right.
They will see this letter.
Then you are on the record. The commission is officially on the record as saying this needs to be addressed.
Yes.
Okay. So that first,
as an environmental issue.
So that first letter to the mayor, we go before we get into specifics.
Yes.
Just say we're concerned with the new bridge to reflect the historical significance, the historical theme.
Significance of the bridge, of the neighborhood, and of the train depot.
Yeah.
I mean, those are the three issues to us.
Architecture,
And again, they've got, I would imagine they're going to have some pretty knowledgeable historic preservation experts that will know how to respond and how to address it through the design process.
Maybe. Be able to actually do that in less than 7 years. Like our plaques. We can always hope, right?
We could help.
What would be our expectation of them when they get back to us?
Maybe just an acknowledgement that they actually read the letter.
Oh, yeah. We're on board. I guess we'd like to get an acknowledgement from them that they would like to comply.
And this is the first, again, because it's the environmental review process is pretty detailed in terms of public outreach and in terms of opportunities for individuals, commissions, councils to weigh in on this. This is not going to be your only opportunity. I just think that the sooner you make these concerns public, the better. And to your question, Commissioner Hill, at this point, my understanding is the commission just wants to make sure that they don't put up, again, sorry, Larry, Caltrans Bridge number 17.
Yeah.
Right? You want something better than that.
And I guess that's what I'm saying. What if they come back with that and say, yes, this is what we're going to do?
Well, then I think the commission has and the city has the ability to say, well, you haven't addressed our legitimate environmental concerns. This is a historic neighborhood. This is a historic resource.
And then we move out everything.
And the standard bridge design doesn't work.
Yeah. I mean, Ontario was able to do it with Euclid Avenue. Look at it when you go.
Yeah. Yeah, Euclid is, it's a spectacular street.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It really, really
and
is.
And Caltrans built right. out, so.
So
it's possible.
I don't have the history that you do, the negative history with Sandbag. I just think if you get on the record early and you get on the record often, Sandbag is, Larry's brought that up. I haven't seen what's done in DeVore, but you just need to make the concerns known early and often.
And get on their side.
Right. Yeah, don't be adversarial towards them.
I would hope, I would think. And with the train station right there, that historic, I would hope they would take that consideration if they haven't already thought of it. Is the smokestack stained? That's stained, right?
Oh, the smokestack.
Mm-hmm. And I hope it does blend
well,
in.
Well, we can certainly call that out in a letter. I mean, the bridge is definitely going to be wider.
Okay.
Quite a bit wider.
Okay.
And that's one of my understanding is that's one of the issues that has been with BNSF is how much of the rail yard are they losing? What are the impacts to track operations? So I think specifically calling that out in the letter, again, if there's ultimately a motion made, that I think is worth noting.
If this looks like it was going to be left.
Yeah, good idea.
And BNSF and BNSF is actually expanding their parking structure out there. I don't know if you read that in the paper. But they're moving forward, so they're a strong asset for this area.
Oh, their new car storage zone? Yeah, it's way to the west.
Right.
Is there a motion?
Yeah, on actually the first item about appointments, or is that just going to be the chair talking to the council member and then we'll bring this back at your next meeting? Is that what you'd like to do?
Oh, speaking on behalf.
Commission appointments and absences. I think the decision had been made pretty much to just have me talk to, I'll talk to one person and I'll talk to Councilman Valdivia.
So this item then gets continued to April 11th?
Yes.
Okay.
The Mount Vernon Bridge, there needs to be a motion.
I make a motion that we generate a letter to the mayor.
I second.
Describing our historic concerns.
Right. With copies to all the council.
Can I have a vote on that, please?
Aye.
And then the final one, Commissioner speaking on behalf of the Commission, that's been solved. And so that doesn't need to continue.
We solved a problem tonight?
You solved a problem. My gosh, you're getting the plaques and everything.
Oh, okay.
We don't have a plaque.
No, we don't
have a
plaque yet. No, we don't.
Chairman, you had mentioned something about Nick making a report, maybe every meeting or every other meeting about what's happening down there. And my curiosity is what is really happening with Metrolink and that, because that directly affects the depot down there, does it not? What's the latest update on that? They're doing some construction to move Metrolink.
Oh, I think the whole idea is to move Metrolink into the depot.
But that's affected access to the depot down there, is it not?
Yeah, I'm not sure how they're working out. I know they're doing a lot of work around this, blocking out part of 3rd Street and doing work around that. But the Metrolink, I believe the Metrolink station or whatever is going to be inside.
They did a presentation, Sandbag did do a presentation to the council. It was actually pretty good. I think two or three meetings ago, you could probably stream that. We could probably, we can see about getting a copy before reading that to the commissioners. But they did do an update on the First Mile project and then the overall Redlands rail project. Council Member Charette asked that they rename it the Redlands Light Rail Project and the San Bernardino Redlands, which I think was a perfectly appropriate comment for him to make.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go on to number eight.
So we could have an update on that.
We'll try to get the presentation that Sandbag gave to the council and forward copies to the commissioners.
Sure. Yeah, just so we know.
Okay. Discussion items for future agenda. Anybody want to put anything on the agenda?
So if I can recap what we have. We have a continuation of the plaques and a continuation of commission appointments and absences.
Yes.
So Lisa, how many times have we had plaques on this agenda?
I know. We're almost there. We're almost there, Susie. One more time.
Just a couple.
One more time, Susie.
Now, is the Mount Vernon Bridge project that continuing to?
The chair writing a letter to the mayor.
And that's all we have to do.
I would say at this point, yes, I think that's adequate.
Okay. Discussion of future agenda items.
Can't think of anything.
Nothing until you help me write a 3-page email to Mark. Okay. Okay. Number nine, the director's report.
I have nothing to report at this time except to come on down to Third Thursday. If you're in town around lunch between 11 and 2, we'll have 7 trucks.
Wow. I haven't been down for several months. I'm so impressed with what I've seen. Is it still getting a lot of people there?
December and January dropped off, unfortunately. Part of that was the holidays. I think part of that was the attack on the IRC. People were a little nervous. And then we got rained out last month for the first time in 17 months.
That was weird. Getting rained out. Sort of like the opposite of the Orange Show.
So, it's supposed to be 80 degrees on Thursday, so come on down.
And, of course, we're there every Thursday. You don't want to tell us about Mr. Oliver?
Thank you. I heard that before.
All right.
So, Oliver Mejica has been working for my department since July. He is the planning manager. He originally came in under a contract through Wildan, and then in January, I was able to twist his arm, and he became a city employee.
It's still you, right?
So he will be. I'm not going anywhere, so I can still be a resource. But Oliver and Lisa will be the regular staff at the meetings. But it's certainly I'm a resource, and Oliver. I don't know if you want to.
So he has to go through another change again, but like Mark said, he's not going anywhere. So I'm looking forward to working with the group. It'll be fun. Sure will.
Yeah, we'll talk about plaques every single time.
Yeah, every meeting. Maybe next meeting will be done.
In that letter, I meant to say this at the time, but Sandy, we'll draft a letter to send to you for your signature. Whenever we say letters from the chair, it means that staff's going to draft them. We don't expect you guys to do that. That's what we get paid to do. So we will draft that letter and send it to you.
Is it appropriate, not that we would have any comment or anything, but would it be appropriate for the commissioners to see the letter before it's sent?
You can't comment on it because it's a violation of the Brown Act. Because, again, it's a serial meeting. I think the better way to do it is you do have, and I think Commissioner Earp said, if you've got particular issues or Commissioner Rudina's, send them to me by Monday because I plan on getting the letter to Sandy on Tuesday. for her to draft, because again, I think this needs to get out sooner. And you will all get copies once it's signed and delivered.
That's fine.
But if you have
we've already passed a motion for her to sign.
Right.
We'd just like to have a copy of the letter.
Oh, you'll get the final copy. Yes, absolutely.
Okay, that's all. That was the only reason.
Yeah.
Okay. So I would call for a motion to adjourn until Monday, April 11th at 5:30. So that's next month.
I move that we adjourn this meeting until Monday, April 11th, 2016 at 5:30 p.m.
Second.
Can I hear you? Everybody's good? Okay, we're out of here.